Hydrogen Bar, your favorite podcast on hydrogen and fuel cells. We are very happy that you have tuned in for today's episode once again. And I'm still here with the two Johanneses. Hello, Johanneses.
Thanks, good to be back.
It always confuses me a little bit when you say Johannes, because I don't know if you mean me or our guest. But I will come over it.
I hope so.
But yeah, thank you again for coming here, Johannes. We discussed last week about your company that is doing the autonomous pods from Estonia into the world. And we discussed a lot about the hydrogen one, that about the refueling, and we will continue with this. It was very interesting, and I'm sure it will be interesting again this week. To start this off, I was wondering about one point that you mentioned last week. You said economically, basically, the hydrogen pod is sometimes even better than the electric or the battery electric one. Now, if I kind of look around and want to buy a hydrogen car, I have to pay significant more money for a hydrogen car than for a battery electric car. Can you explain a little bit why you have here and with this autonomous pod this economic advantage?
I think it's because of two things. Firstly, is in the autonomous vehicle, the main intellectual business which you are selling is the autonomous driving, which is economical already thanks to not using a regular driver inside the vehicle. So a main price points which gives the vehicle a physical thing are the sensorics, the computers, the autonomous software, all the redundancy electronic system in the vehicle, and really the driveline or the what kind of energy solution is in the vehicle is not it does not take such a big part in the overall vehicle's price point. So I think this is the first thing. And secondly, because the vehicle is driving in lower speeds, quite constant speeds, then because the power of the fuel cell is a lot lower compared with a regular vehicle or personal vehicle or even bus or truck, then I think this is also which takes the price point lower compared with the battery vehicle. Mm-hmm.
Where do you see the bigger challenge when developing your vehicles? Do you see the bigger challenge on the drivetrain side? So is it complicated to realize a battery electric or a hydrogen and a fuel cell drivetrain, or is it more challenging to achieve the autonomous self-driving?
I think that about 70-80% of overall strength which goes to the development of autonomous driving is, mm-hmm. is the main part. If we are using batteries or hydrogen, it's a lot lower compared with that.
Do you need to make the special adjustments for kind of having a hydrogen powertrain or an electric? Or is this kind of doesn't matter for the autonomous drive?
Not really. The vehicle is physically from the outside the same, inside the same. We are just replacing the big battery with the hydrogen system, and that's almost all. So all the motors, all the electronics, all the other stuff are almost the same. I think maybe some controller side before the motor is a little bit different, but yeah, overall the same.
Now, a lot of our people, especially here in Germany, of course, or in the European Union, are a bit cautious when they hear autonomous driving on the one hand, and they are also a bit cautious when they hear hydrogen on the other hand. You, of course, you are combining in your new vehicles both the autonomous driving and the hydrogen drivetrain or hydrogen mobility. Have you experienced problems with public acceptance of your system, or is this not a problem which is imminent to you?
So it's a yes and no answer because with the autonomous driving, definitely every country has a little bit different legislation still about autonomous driving. Someone is letting you, some it's easier, some are not, and so on. The really overall public understanding about autonomous vehicle, it's quite a good experience. Again, in Estonia, we have a small. Not a small company, but a small autonomous package robots in Estonia, developed in Estonia, and these are called Starship. So they are almost like I don't know, a small dog-sized robots, which are bringing you some food from the shops. And thinking like 5 years ago, if they drove around in the pedestrian ways and went over the crossings, then usually everybody went so made some pictures, maybe posted it in social media and so on. But now seeing that driving 5 years later with an autonomous vehicles on public streets, then maybe somebody is turning their head, but it's not really a thing which is so new and so strange that it's stopping everybody as it was like 5 years ago. So that's a quite interesting thing. But in a EU level, I really hope that the legislation which is in the autonomous driving would be more constant in every country. And I also hope that this last mile transport are looked a little bit differently as it is a vehicle which goes up to 90 kilometers per hour, because we can stop our vehicles in 2.5 meters, and usually in the lower speed areas, if there is some problem, we can stop as soon as possible. But in other areas, you can't do it, and that's why I'm seeing that the safety system needed in the vehicle is totally different as it is for a regular large speed, high speed autonomous vehicle. That I hope that the legislation for the autonomous vehicle is also thought about our vehicles also, that they don't kill the business away. We are a little bit scared of that it might be a little bit too high grade and really needs an OEM level development work if it's really bad. But that's why we really try to concentrate also on the closed areas where you have a company area in a manufacturing site or a harbor or airport or a open air museum or so on, or totally in city center area where vehicles are not allowed to drive. To really hold the risks a little bit.
I mean, personally, I have to say I'm really looking forward to drive myself or sit myself in such an autonomous vehicle. Maybe there I'm not the standard person.
That's why I have to say that at the moment, almost every country says that we have to have a safety operator inside the vehicle. In some cases, we already, hopefully, even in this year, can get the vehicles driving on public roads. without the safety operator inside the vehicle, but really checking the condition of the vehicle from the teleoperation room. But it, but again, it goes step by step. For example, I think first step is that you have a full teleoperator connectivity with the vehicle. Then the next idea or the next need is that, for example, three vehicles can operate and you have one teleoperator who can take over control of a vehicle which has got some strange obstacle in front of a vehicle. Or, but really, which we are aiming is to get in a level that we have 10 vehicles and one teleoperator. So really, in a risk analyzing, getting and really maybe there is a 20 meter of a road which is in a safety analysis really hard or hard place, or really in a peak speed road is going in front of you. So really, in that place, you need to have a teleoperator and connectivity, and otherwise just supervising and so on. So really, it's not. I think for getting the vehicles fully fully autonomously without anybody ever connecting with the vehicle, it's definitely over 10 years to go. But we have seen that with the low speeds, again, in many times it's not really a problem of latency of the connectivity with the vehicle, but it's a more a problem that you have other senses also when driving with the vehicle. We have tried out up to 40 kilometers per hour with the teleoperator, and after that speed, you just can't hear and feel with the body what the vehicle is doing, and it's really hard to concentrate. Your head is just blowing up from the information. But up to this 25 kilometers per hour, it's more than ideal. And also with 4G connectivity.
Would you say that the legislation in Estonia or also in the European Union gives you the right framework for realizing those ideas, or would something has to change in legislation first so you can get your vehicles on the road in a larger scale?
Two possible ways. The same which you just told. At the moment, everybody's doing some similarities in the legislation, but as soon as we want to go to the masses, we really need some overall understanding what kind of constraints do we have, and what kind of safety tests do we have to do, and so on. We have our own testing system for the vehicle, which is really got together with different experience from different countries. And it was really good to see that Germany also, I think was it a month ago, a couple of weeks ago, said that now they're really letting autonomous vehicle drive on public street. Before that, it was quite hard to do. But yeah, it's so different still in every country. We really, it's in that way, it's really hard to go masses.
Would you say that this regulatory environment is the biggest challenge that you face, or are there others as well?
Again, I think that the same two are the main points. The competitors, which at the moment are quite big compared with us, and also all the work which has to be done on the legislation work in every new projects in a new country. Because we have to make quite a lot of investment to go in a new country, but there is a possibility that at one point they're changing it so much that we have to make the work from the beginning again. But yeah, seeing from the competitors, I think at the moment the main competitors are two France companies, Navi and Easymile, and Local Motors in the USA, who are in the similar business. We have been just trying to physically and overall the technical level, trying to be in every way better because we're seeing that this last mile business does not need a vehicle where you have 15 people inside the vehicle.
Yeah.
We need small, flexible vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And also they started their development work almost 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that really the technology changes so fast that mm-hmm. almost everything which we did 2 years ago, we almost use nothing from the era which we used 2 years ago. We have all the sensorics, all the hardware, all the software side, it's fully new. And we're seeing that it's also still changing quite fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think because compared with the 10 years ago, yeah, when you have changed all the systems like five times in a time and you still have to make quite a lot of investment to get the vehicles driving on public roads, then yeah, I think we just started at the right time. And also in a technical scale, we are seeing that we are in many cases quite a lot better as it is for our competitors. Is it in technical side or overall?
So what are your plans for ramping up your productions? Have you made some simulations or given it some considerations on what the total number of vehicles will be year by year? And if so, have you already thought about which share of vehicles will be powered by a battery and which share will be powered by hydrogen?
Mm-hmm. So we have our own internal goals for the production for the next years. But I think main work which we are doing at the moment is talking with the large manufacturing companies in Europe to really get a better understanding about what kind of steps do we have to go through to get maybe up to 10,000 vehicles a year. But still, in our vision, we're seeing that because we are not building a 90 kilometer per hour vehicle, we don't have to go through all the steps which is for the OEMs for the regular passenger vehicles.
Mm-hmm. And which time frame do you see there? Because as I understand, the pods are running today already. It is economically. So why is not every city coming to you and purchasing them or
setting
them up?
That's an unfair question. But
I mean, or when will this be? I think
you told us at the moment where we want to be for the next year to really provide the end economical transport for. But for that, we really have to get working for end client, as I said, a system where you have one teleoperator and three vehicles operating. Mm-hmm. Because with the safety person inside the vehicle, thanks to legislation part also, it's you can't compare it with the regular van with the driver, because definitely it's more costlier. It's the main thing to get the safety operator outside from the vehicle. And in many cases, I think our competitors have shown their vehicles in the last years. And in many cases, we have seen that they have given a picture for the client that this technology is so far still that it needs a many years more development work. And we are showing in our projects that this is possible. And now we're really trying in our sales teams to show that this technology is not so far away. It's quite near, and we have to just show it and how it's really possible to operate this vehicle.
That's good to hear. I mean, I'm really looking forward. Once I'm back in Europe, I need to try this out.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I can afterward share a couple of places where we have in the near future, so definitely.
One final question from my side, more a general question. Would you say that our future mobility system will mainly be based on autonomous driving, or will it still be the case that the lion's share of vehicles will be operated by a driver and will not function autonomously?
I really hope and also visualize it that the autonomous driving, if at the end it's everyday usage, then there is not really a need for a driver, and I can't imagine only for maybe in the future a regular passenger vehicle behind the wheel driving. Is only for a hobby for somebody, but not really on everyday commute. Just in the overall, to get the transport a lot greener, a lot more efficient, it's a really true meaning of that.
Okay, let's have this as a good vision of the future. I mean, it's definitely I mean, for me, it is a point where I can, a vision that I can look forward to.
In that matter, I think it's really good. I one of my really good friend, or how to say, our one of our board members is a former prime minister, and at that time he had all the time his own driver driving him around, but now he really does not in the going out from the public sector, you can't really bring again your driver to drive you around. And he always says that if you're getting used to it, that you can commute, you can work at the same time, you can be free, it's such a good feeling.
Okay, thank you very much, Johannes, for your time. Once again, it was a big pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you very much for joining us at the bar.
Yeah, hopefully we can see in the near future in a real bar.
Yeah, right. So
Yeah.
I hope that the whole COVID situation will be over soon, and then we'll definitely meet at some conference or whatever. So looking forward to
Definitely.
that.
Let's do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Johannes.
And to all our listeners, again, if you want to get in contact with us or want to get in contact with Johannes and want to also start such a pilot project, reach out to us on our website on hydrogenbar.net on the contact form, and we will establish for sure the contact. With this, thank you very much for listening, and hear you next week.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.